and welcome to Addressing Alaskans, a program capturing community conversations in South Central Alaska. Join us on Alaska Public Media as we travel to different spots throughout our community and listen to local groups gathered to discuss what matters to Alaskans.
On the program this week, we get to learn about the Alaskan Consular Corps. We'll answer some basic questions like, who are consuls? Why do we have them in Alaska? And what do they do? This event was sponsored by the Alaska World Affairs Council and took place at 49th State Brewing Company on January 12th. We go now to Lisa Falsko, President and CEO of the Alaska World Affairs Council, who moderated this discussion.
And now to start our program, I'm so pleased to be joined at my far right. We have South Korea Deputy Consul General Okun Kwon, who's been representing the Ministry of Foreign Affairs of the Republic of Korea since 1986, and she's been here in Alaska since 2015. Right next to her, we have Japan Consul Masatoshi Sato, who's been with the Foreign Service the longest of everyone here at this table since 1980. He just came to Alaska this past May after serving in Trinidad and Tobago. That must be quite the transition from Trinidad to Alaska. And then right next to him, we have Dean of our Alaskan Consular Corps, who's been here in Alaska as the Dean since 1985, for 32 years. British Honorary Consul Dr. Diddy Hitchens, who was honored by Queen Elizabeth II with the Member of British Empire Award in 2005 and inducted in the Alaska's Women's Hall of Fame in 2013. She's a frequent speaker. She's a former president of the Alaska World Affairs Council, and she flew in this morning at 2:30 just for this program and is leaving this afternoon. So I can't believe it. Thank you so much for coming. I wrote to Diddy first about this program, and she was telling me why she couldn't make it and all the things and how excited she was about it. By the end, she's like, oh my gosh, I am going to make it. I'm just going to make it happen. Once again, unbelievable. Thank you so much. And to my immediate right, we have Honorary Consul of Italy, Bonnie Melillo, who started in November 2017, the newest addition to our consular corps. And she had her position upgraded from vice consul to consul when she took over from 30-year veteran consular agent Vittorio Monsimizzani. And so we are very pleased to have you here with us today. And I'm going to start with Honorary Consul Hitchens, if you will. In addition to my office in Norway, we have 33 representatives around the United States. So could you please help us by talking about the various levels of consuls and what each one and title means?
Diplomacy is a very ancient business. Ever since human societies were organized, they began to come into conflict with one another over territory and resources. And so literally from ancient times, the earliest recorded times in the ancient Middle East, in ancient Egypt, in China, throughout the world where human communities came into conflict with one another, rather than fighting, which was very costly, they wanted to be able to resolve things by talking. And so they sent emissaries to one another. And so from the earliest times, we have emissaries. And around that business of emissaries, lots and lots of customs developed. And by the Middle Ages, and then on into the early modern period, the customs often resulted in more conflict because different people had different customs. And so somebody would violate somebody else's protocol in terms of emissaries and how they were recognized. And as a result, the system that had developed was actually resulting in more conflicts than it was resolving. So in the modern period, when the West European countries became very important and powerful, they, having had many conflicts arising out of the unsatisfactory situation, got together and had a conference in Vienna in 1815 and came up with the first convention on diplomatic representation. We have a current convention Vienna Convention on Diplomatic Relations, which is that 1815 treaty, which is updated in 1961 and came into effect in 1964. And what that does is sets out all the details of representation and of procedure and of protection, and it says what consuls and diplomatic agents are supposed to do, where they're supposed to be, who they are, and their everything to do with it. And essentially, in terms of our being here, the most important thing is that every recognized state has the right to have an embassy in another state that recognizes it. So there are now, 205 states in the world. And if they recognize one another, then they can have diplomatic representation, which means that in Washington, D.C., the normal, the embassy is in the capital. Top level of representation is an embassy. Through an agrément, which means an agreement, the language of diplomacy when the treaties were written was French, so much of the wording is French. Countries that recognize one another can have an embassy with an ambassador heading it, and then through mutual agreement, they can have other locations where they have interests. And other locations outside of the capital are the top level is consulates general, the next level is consulates, and then in a place where nation states have interests but don't need to have full-time representation, they can have an honorary consul who isn't a career diplomat, may be locally engaged, but is someone who has been chosen to represent the interests of that state in another state.
Okay, so that's kind of the overview of what the consulates are and the different levels. So could you please talk a little bit about what that means for Alaska? So my understanding is Norway was the first one, thanks to your information. 1903, a gentleman, Tor Lifling, was vice honorary consul for Norway up in Nome. So can you just give us a little bit of brief history of how does that happen? How do we have a vice consul of Norway up in Nome, and how did they come, and what's the history of Alaska?
Well, as we all know, Alaska up until 1867, actually from the 17th century, was belonged to the Russians. But there had been plenty of international contact with the territory of Alaska. There had been naval voyages of discovery. The Spanish had come up this coast, the French had come up this coast, the British had come up this coast. But in addition to that, obviously the native people were already here. There are records of ancient trips that came along this coast from China, sort of pre-recorded history. So there had been foreigners who had linked up with this area, but very, very little because of the harsh conditions and being so far north and the climate. However, the British had actually come across from the East Coast and had entered Alaska because their Hudson's Bay Company was engaged in the fur trade, and they had made their way across and gone to the Arctic. Mackenzie had gone to the Arctic, and Simon Fraser had gone to the West Coast, all in search of furs. And then whaling became a very big thing with the use of oil for lamps. And in the Bering Sea and up into the Arctic Ocean, whaling was very important. And so then many ships started coming around from about 1850 onwards. The whaling ships were coming, and many of them went up to Wrangel Island. And many of the seamen who came on board those ships were Norwegian, and several of the ships were Scandinavian. There were lots of British as well. But in 1896, the Klondike Gold Rush took place, which brought many, many people from all around the world into the Klondike. And then when the Klondike was almost exploited, in 1901, they found gold on the beaches in Nome. And so many of the people who were in the Klondike moved to Nome. And Nome was a city of 24,000 people in 1903. And there were people from all over, and many of them got into fights with one another. And there was a large Norwegian contingent, Swedish contingent, British contingent, and essentially there were so many fights that the authorities in Nome, the U.S. authorities, decided they needed to have some consular officers in order to resolve some of the disputes. And so Nome had its first consul, the Norwegian, in 1903. They had had a Norwegian consular officer down in Sitka because of problems with Norwegian sailors back in before the handover. But in 1903, the Norwegian consul was appointed, and he was actually a Norwegian who came. He wasn't locally appointed. And in 1905, also in Nome, the first British consul was appointed because apparently our seafarers were pretty badly behaved too. Something that I know is still the case since I've dealt with them off the crews of the cruise ships getting drunk and disorderly in Juneau.
Okay, that's one of these things. Be careful the question you ask or what answer you're going to get. Did not know that. Okay, that's an interesting question. Let's ask everyone else on the panel why your country has a consulate or consul here in Alaska. We'll start directly with you, Honorary Consul Molilo.
Hi, thank you for having me. I'm thrilled to be here. I actually do two different aspects of my position. One is to assist American citizens who are living in Alaska. If you would like to visit or work or study in Italy for more than 90 days, then you need to have a visa. American citizens may travel to Italy and stay for up to 90 days without any kind of special documentation. If you're going to stay longer than that, then you need to have a visa. And there's I see a lot of different people for a lot of different reasons. The other part of my job is assisting Italian citizens who are here, who may have some questions, but typically if there's a problem, even a death, then the Italian government is responsible for its citizens to make sure that their remains are returned to Italy. And I just unfortunately had that experience this past May. My friend Gabriella Cianetti, you may remember reading that in the newspaper, was in a plane crash down on the peninsula. And it was quite an eye-opening experience in all of the bureaucracy that takes place and dealing with two completely different cultures, American culture and Italian culture in these situations. So it's been a very fascinating, very interesting position so far.
Thank you very much. And Honorary Consul Hitchens, maybe you can help tell us why your country has a consulate or honorary consulate here in Alaska.
Well, as I mentioned before, the UK has long-standing interests in Alaska. We're involved in exploration, and many of the names along the coast, as you know, were named by Captain Cook. We came into interior Alaska for the fur trade. Were then significantly involved in mining, and many of the mining companies and the infrastructure, such as the White Pass and Yukon Railway, were built by British companies to get to the mines. Continued having an interest in mining, and then, of course, were involved in oil exploration and 1967, it was BP that actually found oil up on the North Slope, and then moved into developing it. And it was largely BP that was responsible for Alyeska pipeline, the TAPS, as they call it. So in the late 70s, but maybe I should say early 80s, just before I became honorary consul, Britain had over 400 employees between BP and Alyeska pipeline, a whole bunch of them from Rolls-Royce, because you may not know it, but all the engines on the pipeline are British Rolls-Royce engines. And obviously, and also, you know, back then, all the international airlines flew through, British Airways flew through, and they had a big contingent because nearly all the airlines that flew 747s, almost all the airline, the 747s back in those days had Rolls-Royce engines. So we had a load of Rolls-Royce people at the airport as well. So with all these, with those families, plus other people who were here through independent reasons, I had a very busy time in my early years. The wives or the spouses, and they nearly all were wives in those days, of all these engineers with BP, couldn't get visas to or work permits. They weren't allowed to work. And so what do you do in Alaska when it's dark and cold? You make babies. So I spent my life registering British babies to make sure that they'd be British as well. But in addition, Brits are really into adventure tourism and things like that. And so sadly, in my early days, there were many times when there were people who had dreadful accidents. And I have to say, one of my worst experiences was when a three-person team all fell into a crevasse up on McKinley and died, and I was the one who telephoned and told their families. But even worse, we didn't get the bodies out for about 5 months, by which time they'd been frozen for 5 months, so the faces were all black, and I had to identify the bodies from passport photos when they were had been in that situation. So essentially, I mean, obviously all of us, our responsibilities are representation, negotiation, and the consular functions. So the consular functions are dealing with our own nationals, plus Americans or other people here who want to go to the UK. But we also have a responsibility. We're actually accredited to the US government, but also to the governor of the state. And because we're those of us who are in Anchorage, in the major city, to the city of Anchorage. And so whenever the mayor or the governor or the state of Alaska have something that they want us to participate in or they want to consult with us, for example, when Sarah Palin was governor, she was urged, invited to be part of the Western Governor's Climate Change Initiative, and Sarah didn't really know very much about that, and so she was open to having advice. So we had a British climate change team who came up and worked with her, and then had all her people over in at the Scott Polar Research Institute in Cambridge for a month, and then Sarah set up her climate change cabinet, headed by Larry, I can't think of his last name at the minute, but he's still essentially an environmental in that role, and Britain had helped to train him. So we have many interests, continuing interests, and we continue to be very involved in many types of links. Britain is the number one foreign investor in Alaska. We are way ahead of anybody else in terms of foreign investment.
You are listening to Addressing Alaskans on KSKA Anchorage. You just finished hearing from Dee Dee Hitchens, who is British Honorary Consul for Alaska. We're learning about the Alaska Consular Corps on today's program. Coming up next, we have the head of the Consular Office of Japan in Anchorage, Consul Masatoshi Sato, explaining why Japan has a consul in Alaska.
Well, thank you for inviting me to serve on this panel. the government of Japan established a consulate in February 1970, and in April 1982 it was upgraded to a consulate general, and then it was downgraded to a consular office as of January 1st, 2006. Anchorage was essential hub for passengers flying from Japan to North and South America and to Europe in until the late 1980s, because as British Honor Council General mentioned, because Chinese and Soviet airspace was off limits, and because the first generation of airliners didn't have the range to fly nonstop across the Pacific Ocean. And regular scheduled passenger service between Alaska, Anchorage, and Japan ceased in early 1990s, following the end of the Cold War. And these developments affected the number of Japanese residents and Japanese visitors in Anchorage. And as the number of Japanese residents and visitors increased, a consulate was upgraded to consulate general, and as the number decreases, it was downgraded to a consular office.
So what you're saying is, if we can get Iceland Air to go Iceland, Anchorage, Anchorage, Japan, then you'll be upgraded back to consul general?
Yes, I hope so.
And we'll all get to go to Japan. I like that. What's the nature of your job? What is a typical day for Consul Sato?
While consular functions is one of the pillars of the work of the our office, public relations, which is another pillar of our work, has growing importance. And with a view to deepening the understanding of the people of Alaska, of Japan, and Japanese people, we try to upgrade our website as frequently as possible. And we also produce free quarterly electronic newsletters. And we also strive to engage Alaskans in cultural and educational programs related to Japan. One example of such a cultural program is screening Japanese films in Alaska. In the middle of last month, my wife and I went to the Kenai Peninsula College to show a Japanese animation film to students studying Japanese. And on our way to the college, we encountered a moose for the first time in our several months in Alaska, when the moose leisurely crossed the road in front of our car. And another example of cultural educational program we offer to Alaska is Japan Exchange and Teaching Program, JET program in short. And JET program invites college graduates to Japan to teach English or to engage in international exchange activities at local government offices. The JET participants experience Japan at the local level and act as cultural ambassadors of the United States to local communities in Japan. Annually, we receive applications in November, and screened applicants I interviewed in the February of the following month. And successful applicants leave for Japan in early August, and they will stay at least 1 year in Japan. And last year, in 2017, 8 young people from Alaska participated in this JET program, bringing the total number of Alaskan young people who have served as assistant language teachers or coordinator in international relations to 222 since 1986.
So that's a great program that Alaskans get to experience. Thank you very much. And now to you, Deputy Consul General Kwan, if you could give us a little bit of information about why your country has a Consul General office here in Alaska, and what is your typical day like?
Thank you for having me here. The Republic of Korea first established a Consul General in Alaska in 1980. However, it was closed in 1999 due to the financial crisis that hit Korea in 1997. The consular office of the Republic of Korea was reopened in 2007 in order to ease the inconvenience of Korean nationals residing here and to enhance cooperation between Korea and Alaska. I represent the Ministry of Foreign Affairs, and I am the lone diplomat dispatched by the Korean government. I currently have 4 administrative assistants working with me to support my activities as the head of the office. If my office did not exist here in Alaska, our citizens would have to travel to Seattle to receive consular services. Additionally, we will not be maintaining active exchanges between Korea and Alaska. The Consular Office of the Republic of Korea will work to promote cooperation and friendship between Korea and Alaska, to work closely with the Korean community and to contribute mutual growth and success of Korea and Alaska. We are here to assist you and provide you any information you may need concerning consular services and the great state of Alaska. We look forward to hearing from you. I will continue to explain our office's missions. Core missions of my office is divided into 4 objectives: government affairs and economy affairs, cultural promotion activities, and consular affairs. First, we strive to strengthen our network with the Alaska state government and numerous municipal governments. Some examples are Governor Bill Walker visited Korea in September 2016. In August 2017, last year, 4 members of the Korean parliament visited Alaska at the request of the Korean government to survey the impact of environmental changes throughout Alaska. We open, connect, and strategize with the Alaskan Congressional delegation. Military, we support the annual Red Flag Joint Force training in Alaska. Second, we promote enhancing the mutual trade relations between Korea and Alaska. For example, the resumption of direct flight between Korea and Alaska stands to benefit all interested parties through increase in number of tourists and visitors, the overall increase in revenue generated from the hospitality sector. We are also keenly interested in the current and future status of resources development in Alaska. Third, we promote cultural exchanges between Korea and Alaska through hosting various performances. In September 2016, our traditional cultural dancers performed in Alaska. In June 2017, the global nonverbal performance team, Nanta, visited Alaska. In 2018, I had hoped to invite the world famous K-pop star, Psy, and BTS, but it seems unlikely due to scheduling conflicts. Instead, we hope to invite the famous B-boy team. First, we are here to provide consular services and protection and safety of Korean nationals, support for the Korean community, and the Korean language school. Thank you.
Well, thank you. And if you bring any of these pop stars, definitely think about the World Affairs Council. Maybe we can do something together, Gangnam style.
This is KSKA Anchorage. You are listening to Addressing Alaskans. Today we are hearing about the Alaskan Consular Corps, who they are and what they do, at an event hosted by the Alaska World Affairs Council. We go back to Lisa Falsko, who is the Norwegian Honorary Consul for Alaska and also moderated this discussion.
Okay, now to travel, and I liked how you mentioned increasing travel and how that helps promote things between the two countries. We are all interested in that. One of my favorite things to talk about is travel. And when I was living in Norway, something that I like to do is I like to go outside and ski from hut to hut on these week-long tours. There's over 500 cabins. Some of them are like hotels with food and people there. I mean, you're in the woods and there's no roads, but somebody is bringing with their snow machines alcohol and food, and it's really cozy and a great thing. So that is something I like to do in Norway. We can talk about that more later, but I want to hear from you guys, Honorary Consul Malilo, what would you recommend for visitors to your country?
Hello?
Yes, it is. Wow. I could talk for hours about visiting Italy. We're very fortunate, my husband and I, also our children, grandchildren, we go to Italy once or twice a year. We have visited our family villages, and we have been all over from the north to the south and east to west. The best times I would recommend for people to visit weather-wise is recommended May, September, and October. But we've been in Italy in November and December. We're going in this year, the end of February, in a couple of weeks. Pretty much any time you go, whatever the weather, it's just such a beautiful place. There's art, there's architecture, there's history, food, wine, beaches, skiing, outside, inside, so many different activities. We go to a very small village where there's no English spoken. We've been going there for years, watch the kids grow up, get married, they're having kids, it's pretty cool. We also love the bigger cities, Rome, Siena. Venice is so unique, so I'm very happy to give advice or suggestions for visiting Italy. I would definitely do your homework because it's so big. Everybody who goes here, it's like with the big three, of course, your first trip, Rome, Florence, Venice. Rick Steves has brought Cinque Terre into the picture. We have not been because it's so crowded now. Hopefully it'll die down a little bit, but those are the three definitely you want to see. But then also getting off and out into the smaller places, into the other regions, the Marche, Umbria, Puglia, Calabria, all the way down south where my family's from. There's so many adventures that you can have.
Do you need to speak Italian to go to Italy?
You don't have to speak Italian to go to Italy. It definitely helps if you learn the beginning phrases, hello and goodbye and thank you and please and permesso. Italians, it's a very, very, very polite culture. And so when you walk into a store, you always greet the people, you know, the small stores, you know, not a giant supermercato, but if you walk into any small store, a bar, a cafe to have a coffee, you always say buongiorno or buonasera. It's how I grew up, actually, on the East Coast doing that. And then if you do that, there is a change between just being the run-of-the-mill tourist to being, oh, someone's a little aware of our culture. A small little thing like that can definitely change your experience. You know, just like making a reservation before to go to dinner, that shows the restaurant you are interested in being at their place, and it changes your experience.
That's probably good advice for all the countries. That's good to know. Okay, and Honorary Consul Hitchens, maybe you can give us a little bit of recommendations for visitors to your wonderful country.
Well, I know that in front of this sophisticated international audience, I really don't need to talk very much about visiting the UK, because I expect all of you have. At least most of you have probably been to England and to London, but I am a proud Scot, and I want to remind you that the United Kingdom unites England, Wales, Scotland, and Northern Ireland. And since you've all probably already been to London, I'm going to say a couple of things about what you can do there. But you ought to really try Scotland and Wales and Northern Ireland, all of which are splendid. In terms of going to those places, probably June and September are the ideal times to go, because you'll get beautiful weather in September, beginning of October, and in June. There are festivals all over the UK, and I went about 3 years ago. I went to Sitka Music Festival here, and then I hopped on a plane from Seattle to London, and then up to Edinburgh, and flew to the Orkney Islands, and went to the St. Magnus Music Festival on the Orkneys, and it was absolutely extraordinary, really incredible. I would recommend that. One thing, if you're going back to London again, there are lots of things to do in London, but really be aware how incredible the music scene is in the summer. And when I say the music scene, I mean everything, from grunge rock to the most wonderful classical, medieval music. And London is unlike other European capitals in that most other European capitals, music closes down in the summer. In London, it opens up, and there's lots of music in the summer, everything you can imagine, right from Festival Hall right on the banks of the Thames to throughout the whole country. And then I had something else in mind. All of you will think, oh God, British food is terrible. That is a complete myth. There are more three-star Michelin restaurants in London than there are in Paris. The food scene is absolutely fantastic. And then if you're into theater, go to the theater in the fall. The fall is when the theater's fantastic. And if you haven't been able to get tickets to go to Hamilton, and I went a few weeks ago in New York, it's in London now and you can get tickets.
Okay, I'm going. Consul Sato, maybe you can tell us, what would you recommend for visitors to Japan?
Well, thank you. My first recommendation to visitors to Japan would be to collect as much information as possible and decide where you like to visit Japan and where in Japan you like to visit and what do you like to do in Japan before visiting Japan. And the Japan National Tourism Organization provide a wealth of information to the visitors in Japan. I have brought a brochure produced by this organization, and I have also several handouts that they are containing in this bag, and I can see some of you already have them, and there are some more outside the exit door, so you're welcome to take them home. And I strongly recommend you browse through the website of Japan National Tourism Organization. And one of the recent featured articles on the website is Beginner's Guide to Japanese Onsen Etiquette. And this describes the specific do's and don'ts of enjoying traditional soothing hot springs called onsen in Japanese. And this is one of the brochure produced by Gero Onsen. Gero Onsen is one of the most famous traditional Japanese hot springs in Japan. And this is contained in the bag I mentioned. And enjoying a relaxing soak in one of the many natural hot springs in Japan is considered to be one of Japan's main tourist attractions. And the second recommendation to visitors to Japan would be to generally follow the maxim, when in Rome, do the Romans do. And I still remember that when I visited New York City for the first time, I went to a Japanese restaurant for dinner. And I had left enough cash to pay the bill, and had opened the door to leave the restaurant. And then one of the waiters chased me and demanded that I should leave some more cash as a tip. And he made me acutely realize that I hadn't done what New Yorkers would do. And you will not experience such embarrassment in Japan. You are not expected to tip a waiter or a waitress at any restaurant, and you don't have to tip a concierge or a porter or a chambermaid in a hotel, and you don't have to tip a taxi driver. I consider it one of Japan's main tourist attractions that you don't have to worry about tipping. And another and probably the most important one of Japan's main tourist attractions would be that Japan is one of the safest tourist destinations, and a tourist would also be impressed by the cleanliness of almost everywhere in Japan, because keeping public places clean is remains to be one of the norms of good behavior in Japanese society. I hope you would take advantage of Japanese hospitality in the near future, the traditional hospitality which is nurtured along the history of more than 2,600 years. I would also like to mention that the Japanese way of hosting and serving guests called omotenashi in Japan, in Japanese, is right from the heart. From July, from late July to early September in 2020, Tokyo will host Olympic and Paralympic Games. And I would presume that the year 2020 would be a good time to visit Japan. Thank you.
You are tuned in to Addressing Alaskans here on Alaska Public Media. Today we are learning about the Alaskan Consular Corps, who they are, and what they do. This event was sponsored by the Alaska World Affairs Council and took place on January 12th. We now go back to our moderator, Lisa Falsko.
Well, that takes us right to our next country, speaking of the Olympics. Okay, Deputy Consul General Kwan, what would you recommend for people who are interested in visiting your country? I hope you talk about the Olympics. I can't wait.
I want to introduce the top 10 most popular Korean attractions of 2007, which announced by Korea Tourism Organization. You know Seoul. Seoul is the capital of the Republic of Korea. The Miracle City, the city of Seoul city known as the Miracle Han River. So I wanna introduce Seoul with so many places to visit. Planning a trip to Korea can be overwhelming. To help you decide where to go, Korea Tourism Organization has created a list of the top 10 most searched attractions in Korea as of 2017. There is Gyeongbokgung Palace in Seoul, and Changdeokgung Palace, and Huwon. All is Joseon Dynasty's Royal Palace. And then you can go to Insadong, Bukchon Hanok Village. The modern place is Lotte World, and then Lotte World Mall, and Seoul Tower. Shopping, if you want shopping, you can go to Myeongdong and Hongdae. If you want to see nature, Namisom Island and the Garden of Morning Calm. And in Korea, there are many themed tourism. So I want to introduce medical tourism. Korea is very popular plastic surgery. If you want to go to plastic surgery, you can go to Korea. And then Korea is divided into north and south. There are demilitary zone, DMZ. There is DMZ tours. You can find there is BBD scars in our nation. Also very unique experience if you can go temple, Buddhist temple. There are program, many program temple stay. And then beauty and wellness. Industrial tours. You can visit Samsung High Technology Museum. And then performing art tourism. There is performance size Gangnam Style and BTS. So you can watch their performance. And I introduce Pyeongchang 2017 Winter Olympic Games, the 23rd Olympic Winter Game will be held for 17 days from 9 to 25 February 2018 in Pyeongchang, Gangwon Province, the Republic of Korea. Pyeongchang was selected as the host city of the 2018 Olympic Winter Games after receiving a majority vote at the 123rd IOC session held on 6 July 2011. After three consecutive bids, the Olympic Winter Games will be held in Korea for the first time in 30 years after the Seoul Olympic Games in 1988. Pyeongchang will be the stage for the opening and closing ceremonies and when most snow sports, alpine speed events will take place in Jeongseon, and all ice sports will be completed in the coastal city Gangneung. 1 month later will take place in Pyeongchang. You can go to Pyeongchang. Welcome to Pyeongchang. Thank you.
Okay, we're going to take some questions. If you want to raise your hand, with that you can ask a question of anyone here on the panel, and I just ask you to speak into the microphone for our radio listeners.
Hello. Do you have any advice for college students interested in opportunities in these areas?
Interested in opportunities? You talking about travel opportunities or work opportunities?
Work
opportunities. Okay, does anyone have any advice for college students who are interested in work opportunities in their country?
Having been a professor as well, probably my most constant consular responsibility nowadays is making sure that students who are going to study in the UK, and there are lots of graduate programs. We also have the great honor that we have an Alaskan who's won a Rhodes Scholarship and will be going to study in the UK for the next three academic years. But they have to have a visa in order to be there, and so I would say that for the last 20 years or more, Alaska permanently has about 20 students who are studying over in the UK doing graduate work. It's much, much harder now than it used to be for students who study there to then be able to stay and to work there. But we used to have something called the British North America Exchange. And so students from the US, if they went and studied in the UK, could then stay on for at least 6 months working. And if then whoever employed them actually specifically put in a request for that student to be allowed to stay and work there, then that it was possible to do. But I'm afraid to say that it has become much, much more difficult. And so the best thing to do is, if you're here in Alaska, is go and work for one of the British companies that's here and then get them to transfer you over so that you're on a treaty trader exchange.
Yeah, I'd have to echo that. So for Norway, education is free. So if you want to get a master's degree or a doctorate degree, you can do it in English. It's completely free. And then I would help you with the paperwork to get the permit and to study there. Working is more difficult, and that's great advice to find a Norwegian company and try to get a transfer. Next question.
Hi. As we all know, Alaska is what makes the United States an Arctic nation, and I know that Didi is very involved in Arctic affairs, both personally and I would guess to some extent for the country that you work for. But I'm wondering about the other nations represented at the table, whether you have Arctic involvement in Arctic affairs.
Okay, that great. Let's talk about the Arctic really quickly. So I'll start with that one. Norway's number one foreign policy priority is the Arctic.
So more than Syria, more than the United Nations, the Arctic is the number one priority for Norway. That's where they put their focus, their dollars. It makes Alaska very important. So Alaska makes the U.S. an Arctic country, and Norway recognized that. And so we have people coming here all the time, and they have their attention on Alaska, what we're doing, and a lot of interest in that. So for Norway, the Arctic is very, very important.
I'm not aware of anything with Italy dealing directly with the Arctic. They're very environmentally aware and interested. Recycling is all over Italy. There is Eni is a oil company here who is doing exploration up there also. So that's
and on the Arctic as an observer country, absolutely.
Yeah, Italy is an observer of the Arctic Council. That was one respect in which my appointment was unusual, because even though I'm honorary consul, during the period that the United States was the chair of the Arctic Council, I was actually part of the official British delegation representing Britain at the Arctic Council. So I think I attended almost every Arctic Council meeting during those 2 years. And the UK has always been very interested. I was involved in exploration of both poles, very, very interested in environmental issues. UK isn't expending as much of its budget as I would like it to be on Arctic issues, but nevertheless, it is a big focus for them.
And Consul Sato, the Arctic, is that an area of focus for your country?
Yes. Japan is one of the observer countries in the Arctic Council, and we established Arctic policy in 2015, and our main focus is research in the Arctic region.
Research. And Deputy Consul General Kwan.
Yeah, we also, the Arctic Council member 2 years ago, in August 2015, there were Arctic meeting. So at the time, the President Obama and the Secretary of State came here, and then our minister also came here. So we are very busy to handle that one. So yeah, we are interested in Arctic issue. Thank you.
If you please join me for a round of applause for our esteemed guests up here. Thank you so much for coming.
Thank you for listening to Addressing Alaskans today on Alaska Public Media. I hope you've enjoyed learning about the Consular Corps here in Alaska and all the things they do. If you missed a portion of the show, you can always go back and listen to it again by visiting the Addressing Alaskans page at alaskapublic.org. I'm your host and producer for Addressing Alaskans, Eric Bork, for KSKA Anchorage.
Addressing Alaskans is a production of Alaska Public Media, which is solely responsible for its content. Theme music is by Patrick Lee. The views expressed are those of the hosts and participants and do not reflect KSKA or its underwriters. To let us know about an upcoming community event that you would like to hear on Addressing Alaskans, just go to our website at alaskapublic.org and click on Contact Us at the bottom of the page. Learn more about Addressing Alaskans and listen online at alaskapublic.org.
Life Informed. This is Alaska Public Media.